Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, July 30th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Come fly with me. Who needs a ride? Fotzler shares love of flight with youth. As a University of Illinois sophomore in 1967, Neil Flutzer often listened to his friend, an aviation student, chatter about his aerial exploits. Eventually, tired of simply hearing about flying, he asked, "Well, why don't you take me for a ride?" So when Flotzer, a first-time flyer, strapped himself into the co-pilot seat of his friend's little aircraft on a torrid afternoon when the air is rather bumpy for flight, he was merely seeking a novel experience. Flotzer got more than he could have ever asked for, and he has been looking for ways to return that favor ever since by taking everyone flying. That first ride was a memorable one, for all the wrong reasons. Once airborne, the pilot decided to flaunt his aerial skills and perform spins and drops for Fotzler, which unfortunately led to serious nausea for the Prophetstown native. The duo immediately turned back, but Fotzler's air sickness worsened and he started retching. The inexperienced flyer decided to open his window to vomit. Bad idea, Fotzler recalls, as the contents of his stomach flew right back at him. "So, my first flight wasn't any fun," he said with a chuckle, "but I got the bug, which is strange. I guess I just had this urge to conquer flying." As a U of I student, he took lessons at the Institute of Aviation to no avail. Ultimately, he earned his civilian pilot's license around 1969 under the guidance of a former military pilot in his hometown. Ever since the 69-year-old first soloed, he has been looking for ways to share that experience. In 2002, the Champaign resident was approached by the Experimental Aviation Association, an organization that promotes recreational flying, asking if he'd be a volunteer pilot for their Young Eagles initiative. Founded in 1992, the program is designed to spur interest in flying for youths aged 8 to 17 by giving them their first experience for free. Fotzler identified with the mission and took off with the Young Eagles for the first time from Willard Airport on August 2, 2002. Since then, he has logged 100 flights for the program. When informed of this statistic, Fotzler said he was unaware of it, but not surprised. "I give airplane rides all the time, whether you're Young Eagles or not," he said. "And if they develop an interest in flying or something, who knows? Maybe they get the bug, but it's just fun for me." Fotzler has given tons of others free airplane rides as well, from high school students to his own family members. The passionate pilot even asked a reporter on this story, "You want to go flying?" To which the reporter responded, "Yes, why not?" Later that week, they drove to Day Aerial Place, a grass airfield enveloped by cornfields about 5 miles east of Urbana. There, Fotzler unveiled his single propeller-driven light aircraft, the Cessna Skyhawk 172. It sits snugly in a lemon-colored hangar garage, which would be rather roomy, even with the plane, if not littered with spare tools, parts, and accessories for the aircraft. The pungent odor of aviation fuel was pervasive and inescapable. After inspecting and oiling the engine, Fotzler hooked the front landing wheel to an old riding mower and pushed the airplane out of the hangar. Once in the open, he conducted a final functional check of all the basic parts, the rudder, propeller, and ailerons, while explaining their usage and physics. He then put on his Young Eagles flight leader baseball hat and declared that it was time to board. Strapped in tight, aviation headsets on, he taxied to the end of the runway just some feet away from a cornfield. Finally in position, the seasoned pilot consulted his 31-point pre-flight checklist for the last time, affixed an iPad to his right thigh, turned on a navigation app for aviation, and flipped on all systems for takeoff. Momentarily after the wheel started rolling, Fotzler tugged on the control stick, and the Skyhawk took flight at 60 miles per hour. "You'll get the feel of it when it's what it's like to really fly in a small plane," Flutzer said once airborne, his voice muffled by the whirling engine. In between speaking with air traffic controller at Willard, Fotzler played the role of tour guide as he piloted around Champaign-Urbana, dropping in altitude and speed at times for a finer view of the sights and pointing out his favorite spots in the county. It was as if he was showing a new friend the old neighborhood from 3,000 feet in the sky. Unlike his young eagle rides, which are brief and circle around Tolono and Philo, this trip lasted roughly an hour and covered extensive areas of the county. Eventually, Fossler turned back for Day Arrow and landed smoothly at 80 miles per hour. Soon after touchdown, Fossler made an entry to his usage diary and conducted a meticulous post-flight ritual to ascertain that everything was in order. He said it cost him roughly $85 per hour every time he takes someone flying, but that is easily worth it. If others enjoy it, you enjoy their enjoyment. It's just that much fun, Fossler said with a beaming smile. That's what it's all about. USS Indianapolis, 73rd Anniversary, Salvaging a Tale of Disaster. Book offers new details on worst U.S. naval tragedy. 73 years after the disastrous torpedo sinking, a book about the USS Indianapolis is climbing the bestsellers list with acknowledgments to a trio of local people. Indianapolis, the True Story of the Worst Sea Disaster in U.S. Naval History, by Lynn Vincent and Sarah Valdick, includes testimony from Art Linerman of Mahomet, the last survivor in the area, and help from Peggy Campo, the secretary of the Indianapolis Survivors Group and daughter of the late Don McCall. Her brother, also named Don McCall, contributed as well. Around midnight on July 30, 1945, the Indianapolis was sailing alone when it was sunk by a Japanese sub. 900 men made it into the water alive. Only a few more than 300 crew members made it back home after floating in shark-infested waters. Just days before, the Indianapolis had delivered components of an atomic bomb meant for Japan, a top-secret mission. Linerman lost 20 of his 180 pounds in the aftermath of the disaster. He was honored at a Cubs game Thursday. I'm not really a Cubs fan. It was by way of chance. Now 94, he said the recent reunion was bittersweet. There were 5 survivors on hand, Campo said, and there are only 14 survivors remaining. Linerman hasn't had a chance to finish the book yet. Its full title also references the effort to exonerate the captain. Campo praised the authors for adding to the history of the ship and the men who were lost and the men who survived. New in the book is, of course, the research related to the search and discovery of the Indianapolis wreck, Campo said of the 2017 find. She said there is also clarification of the number of men that sailed and the number of survivors. The notes section in the back of the book shows the extent of their research, and many of the men's stories came from interviews done over a decade when putting together the documentary. Her brother said the book covers a lot of information that, up to this time, was probably not known too much. He said he led the authors to a biography of Admiral Raymond Spruce that contributed to the background of the Indianapolis in World War II. The huge ship was in the Philippine Sea on July 30th. 2 Japanese torpedoes sank it within minutes. Over the next 5 nights, sharks, burns, injuries, and dehydration took their toll. Vladek said she became interested in the Indianapolis story at 13 after seeing the documentary. I dreamed of becoming a filmmaker and thought the story would make a great movie. She began interviewing survivors on camera in 2005. The filmmaker already had 107 interviews before she started writing. A producer said a book should come before a movie. Vincent had been an investigative journalist and Navy veteran. The two teamed up for the nonfiction book. The pair had help from a damage control officer aboard the Indianapolis who read each draft. He died before publication with another round of notes ready to go. Captain Charles McVeigh had been wrongly court-martialed for the disaster, many are convinced. Vincent and Vladek also write about Hiroshito, the Japanese sub-commander who sank the ship, but later joined the battle to exonerate McVeigh. It's a great mix of history plus personal stories of survivors. They were able to get access to so many records, so much of that was classified. Our task was to go into primary sources and rebuild the case from scratch. We found the culpability of senior officers on both sides of the Philippine Sea was greater than had been previously known. In the National Archives, the authors found correspondence showing that the Navy Inspector General and the Fleet Admiral were well aware that several highly ranked officers should have been held accountable for intelligence and operational failures that led to the sinking. And from the local page, man barricades self, dies by gun, wound appeared self-inflicted, from Champaign. A man who barricaded himself inside a Southwest Champaign home Saturday night died Sunday morning from an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. Both the Champaign Police Department SWAT team and the Champaign Police University of Illinois Police Explosive Ordnance Disposal Team were outside the home while police and negotiators tried to talk the man into leaving. According to a police report, Champaign officers were first called to the 4400 block of Ironwood Lane at 4:10 a.m. Saturday to respond to a report of a domestic violence between a 38-year-old woman and her live-in boyfriend, a 56-year-old man. Police learned that the woman had been taken to Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana on Friday morning after her boyfriend allegedly pepper-sprayed her, restrained her against her will, and hit her multiple times in the head and body. The woman received treatment and was released from the hospital later Friday morning. While police determined there was probable cause to arrest the boyfriend for aggravated domestic battery and aggravated unlawful restraint, they were not able to find him. Police also learned the man was potentially suicidal and had multiple firearms. At 11:10 p.m. Saturday, officers were again called to the home on Ironwood after learning the boyfriend had returned and was possibly suicidal. Police negotiators tried to talk the man into coming out of the house, but he barricaded himself inside and refused to leave. Both the SWAT and explosive ordnance disposal teams were called to the home while negotiations continued. At 4:15 a.m. Sunday, police heard what sounded like a single gunshot come from inside the home. The SWAT team went in and found the boyfriend with an apparent self-afflicted gunshot wound. A SWAT team medic from the Champaign Fire Department provided aid at the scene before the man was taken by ambulance to the hospital where police say he died. Police are investigating the incident and request anyone with information to call 217-351-4545. Also from Champaign, police seek info on shooting that hurt one. Champaign County Crime Stoppers needs help finding the person or people responsible for a shooting in Urbana that gravely injured a teenage boy. At about 11:40 p.m. on Friday, July 20th, residents of the 1300 block of West Beach Street heard gunshots and found a 14-year-old boy in the street who had been hit in the back by gunfire. He remains hospitalized with life-threatening injuries. Police found that a nearby house had also been pierced by several of the shots fired, but the two men in the house were not physically harmed. If you have information, please contact Champaign County Crime Stoppers at 217-373-TIPS. Back to the front page. Pair sought in murder of man outside party. Shooting followed altercation with victim, from Urbana. Urbana police are looking for two men they believe took part in killing a man outside a home in East Urbana a week ago. Sergeant Matt Bain said warrants have been issued for Corey D. Jackson, 31, and Keith Campbell, 27, for the first-degree murder of Martez Taylor. Mr. Taylor, 27, of Champaign, was shot several times as he sat in a car outside a home in the 1900 block of East Florida Avenue about 12:40 a.m., July 21st. Police said the shooting happened moments after an altercation with another person inside at a party. Mr. Taylor's sister, Alexis Tate, earlier told the News Gazette it's believed that her brother had stepped on a man's shoe while dancing, upsetting him. She was told that man reportedly came at her brother to strike him, and he responded by defending himself and taking that man to the floor. Bain said police learned that the man that Taylor accidentally bumped was Campbell, and that Campbell responded by punching Mr. Taylor. They fought inside, and Taylor won. The fight was broken up by several people, he said, adding that Mr. Taylor left and was waiting in the back seat of a car for his ride to join him. Campbell and Jackson pair up and go directly to that car and try to forcibly remove Taylor. He was able to keep the door closed. Both produced a single gun, said Bain, adding that police are not clear who fired the shots. They shot through the door multiple times, we believe 5 shots. 4 went through the window and 1 through the door. Then Campbell and Jackson ran and maybe got into a car. We're unsure if they were picked up or left in their own vehicle. Bain said the scene was chaotic, as there were people fleeing all over the place and cars leaving. What is certain is that both were standing at the car door, a firearm was produced, and he, Mr. Taylor, was shot multiple times. Bain said the last known address police have for Jackson is in the 1100 block of Austin Drive, and for Campbell is in the 2400 block of East Elm Street, both in Urbana. Bond on each of their warrants was set at $1 million. Champaign County court records show Jackson has several prior convictions dating to 2004 for obstructing justice, possession with intent to deliver cannabis, possession with intent to deliver a controlled substance, and failure to report an accident. He is currently out on bond on a Class 2 felony unlawful use of weapons case and set to be back in court September 4th. Campbell has previous convictions for aggravated battery of a peace officer and aggravated fleeing. Anyone with information on the whereabouts of either man is asked to call Urbana Police at 217-384-2320. Peoria salvage firm bid dwarfed Pacas. It won rights to pull materials from Burnham and other buildings from Champaign. Peoria Architectural Salvage will be paying the Champaign School District $7,586 for the right to remove items that can be salvaged in 4 houses being demolished to make way for a larger central high school campus. The Peoria business's bid was well over the $50 the Preservation and Conservation Association of Champaign County proposed paying the district for salvage rights. A notice to potential bidders said the school district would choose the highest responsible bidder for the salvage rights to the Burnham Mansion at 603 West Church Street, plus houses at 201 North Lynn Street, 203 North Lynn Street, and 606 West Park Avenue. Among the items at the houses available for salvage are iron fences and gates, kitchen and bathroom fixtures, radiators, registers, light fixtures, switches and outlet covers, marble facings and trim, millwork, custom paneling, wooden stairs and handrails, architectural woodwork, custom casework, wood paneled doors with their hardware and operating mechanisms, windows, decorative tile, and wood flooring, according to the bid notice. The properties were originally constructed in the late 1800s for use as private residences, but in recent years they have been subdivided into multiple apartment units. The properties are wood frame construction. Many of the original architectural elements remain in the properties. PACA Executive Director Tom Garza said the organization submitted just a token bid to the school district because it's a nonprofit that doesn't buy salvage. While PACA operates a salvage warehouse store in downtown Champaign, its mission is really educating the community and working on its behalf to save old houses and things that would otherwise be thrown away. Garza said PACA bid the same amount, $50, for the salvage rights to Champaign's Dr. Howard Elementary School, which is being torn down and replaced. In that case, the organization was the only bidder, and the salvage job ended up costing PACA some money due to asbestos in the building. The Peoria Architectural Salvage website indicates it buys and sells architectural salvage, including antique hardware, stained glass, cables, windows, doors, reclaimed lumber, doorknobs, and light fixtures. The business makes its salvage items available through both a website and warehouse. There were 3 bids in all for the salvage rights to the Champaign houses near Central, 2 of them from Peoria Salvage Operations, according to the school district. A date hasn't yet been set for the salvage operation to begin, according to district spokeswoman Emily Schmidt. Shelter for Men may be moving from Champaign. Plans are underway to relocate the men's winter emergency shelter from a local church to the Time Center building in downtown Champaign and open overnight stays to homeless men there November 1st. The Time Center at 70 East Washington Street is currently owned by the Mental Health and Substance Abuse Treatment Agency, Rosecrans. Moving the men's shelter to the Time Center building is contingent on Rosecrans finalizing a lease with See You at Home, a Champaign agency that serves the homeless. The Reverend Cheryl Palmer, senior pastor of Faith United Methodist Church, said tentative plans call for her church to continue to operate the men's shelter for this coming winter, and for other local churches and volunteers to continue to be involved with See You at Home, taking over running the shelter the following winter. This will be the third winter for the men's shelter, which operated its first winter at Faith United Methodist Church and First Presbyterian Church and moved last winter to New Covenant Fellowship Church. See You at Home is already planning to move its headquarters and daytime drop-in center to the Time Center building if it finalizes a lease with Rosecrans. The building became available after Rosecrans ended a transitional housing program there June 30th. Chris Gleason, executive director of Rosecrans Central Illinois, said the transitional housing program was financially unsustainable and was averaging fewer than 18 men a year. We operated that at a loss. There were 13 men in the transitional housing program when it ended, and all were relocated to other housing. See You at Home Executive Director Rob Dahlhouse said his agency is working with leaders of the men's emergency shelter and others in the community to eventually bring several services for the homeless under one roof. See You at Home already operates some transitional housing in the community that offers a place to live and case management for 6 months to a year. That includes a 6-bed men's recovery house, a 2-bed women's house, and a small family house. One future possibility would be for See You at Home to bring back some additional transitional housing at the Time Center after the agency moves in. One of the keys for See You at Home is making sure we continue the legacy of the Time Center. With community support, it may even be possible to expand the men's overnight shelter from providing beds only in the cold months of winter into a year-round operation. Palmer said it's possible the closure of the transitional housing program by Rosecrans could increase the number of homeless men seeking shelter this winter, given that the shelter at the New Covenant Fellowship ran short on space this past winter and overflow space had to be used. It's anticipated that the Time Center could provide beds for at least 50 men in the winter ahead. The facility includes a dorm area, 10 2-bedrooms, laundry facilities, and a small library. There's a lot of space to utilize this for what we're going to be doing. Now an article by Tom Kasich, Lonegan holding town halls, Davis still won't. Democratic congressional hopeful Betsy Lonegan is undertaking a series of town hall meetings throughout the 13th Congressional District, creating a bright distinction with incumbent Representative Rodney Davis, who has refused to conduct town halls. Lonegan held her first town hall last Wednesday in Macoupin County and will hold the second of 14, one for each county in the district, today in Greene County. It's uncertain when the Springfield Democrat will get over to Champaign, Macon, Piatt, and DeWitt counties on the eastern side of the sprawling district, said campaign spokeswoman Kate Martucci. The town halls will take place throughout August and in the first half of September. Lonegan has pledged to do a town hall meeting at least once every quarter if she is elected to Congress. Davis has declined to hold town hall meetings, opting instead for teletown halls in which constituents can call into a mass event by phone or for meetings with individuals or small groups in his offices around the district. I do plenty of teletown halls and give an opportunity for even more people that don't want to listen to the screaming and shouting from people who obviously don't want me to win or even be in this job, Davis said in February 2017 on WDWS. We've consistently done what we call open office hours, where we meet with groups who agree and groups who disagree, and also meet with constituents who really have problems with the federal bureaucracy. Those are the types of things that I've said I'm going to continue to do in my job and put the politics and the screaming from people who don't want me in my job off to the side. He reiterated that belief this spring. There's nothing more to say except that those who are politically opposed to me and opposed to what we want to do are not conducive to solving the problems that I was talking about to actually have a conversation about toning down the hate and the vitriol. Martucci said the Lonergan town halls are more than doing what Congressman Davis refuses to do. She's doing it because she knows that people are tired of not being heard. That's something that we heard throughout the primary. We're putting the work in to make sure that people have the opportunity to interact with her. She can only get so much done in one-on-one meetings, especially when it's closed door. You want to see how folks interact in the public, and that's what we're trying to do. A letter to the editor. Trump wants peace in the world. President Trump is doing a good job trying to bring peace to the world by meeting with longtime adversaries. Meeting face to face gives him a chance to get a good feel for the person's true character and intent for sincere peace efforts. He may not always be the politically correct speaker, but a lot of people like that he says what many Americans think. His frankness and true desire to bring peace is a nice change for our country. Too many politicians are more focused on what is good for their party instead of what is good for the country. I say bravo, President Trump. I pray for your success in bringing better relations to the world. Barbara Edwards, Arcola. And from Colorado Springs, Colorado, bear freed from city storm drain. Authorities have freed a bear that got caught in a storm drain for about an hour. Colorado Springs utilities workers and Colorado Parks and Wildlife Southeast Region workers arrived to the residential neighborhood Thursday to work out a strategy to get the Bruin out. They didn't want to handle it because they would have to tag it, and it would be euthanized if tagged again. Wildlife officials harassed the bear by firing a non-lethal rubber slug while utility workers opened a manhole. The bear, estimated to be about 250 pounds, climbed out and was chased away. Another letter to the editor. Trump has no room to be critical. Who is more patriotic, President Donald Trump or Colin Kaepernick? Patriotism has been variously defined as love of country, serving one's country, waving the flag, and standing while the national anthem is being played. Athletic events have become a popular place for celebrating patriotism by playing the national anthem and presenting a military honor guard. The crowd is expected to stand to show support and respect. This custom began during the 1918 World Series in Chicago. Trump has criticized quarterback Kaepernick for exercising his First Amendment rights by kneeling as the national anthem was played prior to games. Trump lied about Kaepernick's motive. Trump has a reputation for being a pathological liar when speaking to the American people. So who is more patriotic, Trump or Kaepernick? Mike Woods, Rural Champaign. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, July 30th. Please stay tuned.